This is Fail Farron. And I am driving home. I didn't expect to be driving home today. I expected to be driving to my dad's. But I am driving home. So I thought, well, as long as I'm driving home, I'll just go ahead and record the podcast. It's been an exciting couple of days. Everything was just kind of puttering along. We're all good, all good. I got to work yesterday. And I got a call from my dad. And he said, Phil, He just said, I don't know who I am. I don't know where I am. I said, well, Pop, do you want me to come over? Yeah, I think you better. So I hopped in the car, ran over there. Sure enough, I mean, he was really struggling. He didn't seem to have any paralysis on his face, anything like that, but he was obviously struggling. So we got him a little bit to eat. We got him some coffee. He said he'd had a rough night not being able to sleep. And so I talked to him for a little bit, and he was having trouble with word salad. He just couldn't get the words formed. He was making up words. He seemed to understand me fine, but he couldn't get communicated back out. And so I called hospice, and they sent a nurse by. And she talked to him for a little bit in the afternoon, and she said, well, from what you're describing, he does seem to be getting better. And I said, yes, he is getting better. She said, well, she said it could either be a stroke or a TIA. She said the TIAs, there's a possibility you can recover in like 24 hours. She said with the stroke, she said you're not going to recover from that immediately. So she said we'll just have to wait and see. So I had already planned to stay with Dad all of yesterday, and then kind of make a decision this morning as to how he was doing, because he has bounced back from things in the past. I mean, that's kind of his thing. He bounces back. So I was with him pretty much all day yesterday, and you know, by about 6 in the evening, he was puttering around, he was working on his computer, and he seemed to be okay. So I had a breakfast this morning with a friend at 6, so we went ahead and did that. Excuse me, I'm yawning. I told him I would do that, and I got back to the house, I don't know, about 7:15. He was already up and around and making his breakfast, and so, you know, he made his oatmeal, put it in the microwave, got that done, made him some coffee, did all that kind of stuff, you know, seems like he's back. So, you know, that was all good. He is talking now about wanting to move out of the house. I think this has kind of rattled him a little bit, and we've had this conversation before of him wanting to move out of the house, and then we start proceeding with it, and then as soon as we get a little closer, it's, no, I don't want to move out of the house. So I think this has just triggered that again. The nurse did come by, or is coming by again to see him. She hasn't called me yet, so either everything was fine, or so I think that's good. So I stayed with him last night. I was planning to go back and stay with him again tonight, which I will still do. I just have a little detour because apparently last night we had a big thunderstorm come through and we got hit by lightning last night at the house. So our internet is out. It looks like the company that we buy our internet from, they were out fixing some things on the tower. It's interesting because we put this lightning protection on the tower and they put up an antenna taller than the lightning protection, but you know, everybody gets to do what they want to do in life. And unfortunately, my hope was not true with my house, apparently. I have trees all around my house, so I assume that when that gets moist and, you know, there's wet and there's lightning, that the lightning would just track through the water down to the ground and that would be the end of it. But apparently my little antenna that's sticking up off the crest of the roof got hit last night, flipped a couple of breakers. I have no idea where it went or what's going to fail in the next few days. But, you know, hey, that's life and electricity when you don't have lightning rods on your stuff. So,
gotta go home.
Excuse me, a little tired. Gotta go home. Gotta figure out what pieces got hit. Gotta order some pieces. I would like to have internet at the house when I leave to go see my dad in a couple of hours. Gonna be home all day tomorrow, obviously, but I am gonna have some running around to do, and I was at kind of a paused point, and there's a bunch of days this month, so I'm gonna have plenty of hours, and I just thought, you know, I should just go home and get this going. So I'm doing that. We did hear from the VA, finally, from the veterans. They have put Dad in what's called Priority Group 1, which means that he gets everything. I haven't heard anything about a pension, but he gets everything. You know, if you want to go through the VA for health benefits, they'll just pay for it, so including the hearing aid. So, yay, we got that far. Obviously, Dad's a little disrupted right now. He doesn't want to do that immediately, but it's available to us. I'm also interested to see, and I haven't checked this out yet, I have to ask, it would be just fabulous if Maranatha Village was one of the places that the VA recognized as a home for veterans. That would be just fabulous because the VA will pay for long-term care now that Dad's a priority one. So we'll see. I gotta make the phone call. We gotta do that thing. We gotta find out what's going on. Anyways, writing, surprisingly enough, is going fine. I have a meeting this evening, and I knew it was coming up. So I had sort of planned ahead and kind of wrote ahead a little bit, so I'm good on words. I think it's okay. It's, you know, I've been a little distracted, so it's, I'm sure it's fine. And, you know, honestly, I threw my notes together really quick yesterday, so the notes are a little gappy, but we'll talk about what we're going to talk about anyways, and we'll go forward. My daughter comes to see my dad once a week on Wednesdays, and so I was with Dad most of the day on yesterday. And then as soon as she came, then I ran home, so that gave me like an hour. Well, I left at, I left at 10 till 4, and I was back at 5 o'clock, so, you know, it gave me an hour back and forth to get that done. And, you know, was able to get it done, was able to get back when I needed to get back, and yay, so all is well. So that was good. So when I made my notes, I was going through them very, very rapidly. So hopefully everything's here, and if it's not, that's fine too. I didn't even write down the title, so shows you how fast I was processing through stuff, trying to get done and get gone. I may be able to find the title. One moment. This was one of those really interesting things, because it was like a school of life thing or something like that. And it was interesting because I started listening to it and I was thinking, okay, yeah, this is going to be fine. And then the longer I listened to it, the more that I thought, well, hey, this is pretty good. It is from the School of Life. And the video was called How the Modern World Makes Us Mentally Ill. Now, course, we're going to get around to the fact that I don't think it really is the modern world that makes us mentally ill. It's our flesh. But they pointed out a lot of good things. They really did point out a lot of good things. They said, you know, the modern world's good. We've got dentistry. Yay. Cars are reliable. You can talk to your grandmother in Scotland when you're sitting in Mexico. I mean, those are cool things. Those are all really cool things. They said, but it's also powerfully and tragically geared to cause a high level of background anxiety and widespread low-level depression. And so they went through and identified the six features of the modern world that they feel contribute to this, and then they what they think should be a cure. So that was pretty interesting. The first one is that we supposedly live in meritocracies. That our societies tell us that everyone is free, and to make it, if they've got the talent, the energy, and you know, you can just go out there and you can make it, ta-da, you can be a quote-unquote success. But of course, there's some people who don't make it. And in the process of not making it, then, if you think that hard work and talent is all that's required to quote-unquote make it, then anybody who's poor, well, that's just an evidence of something that's wrong in their life. And that's not really true. Certainly, I've had some successes in life. And certainly, getting above the ground noise twice, once with Finale and then once with the Nitpicker's Guides in, you know, two completely different fields, that's unusual. And I certainly attribute that to the help of Jesus. But there was a certain component in some of this of just being in the right place at the right time. While it's true that you have to prepare, you can also look back in very successful people's lives and you can see that they were in the right place at the right time. They call this luck. It certainly feels like along the way as I've been puttering along, it wasn't luck. It was focusing at the right time on the right thing because there was a nudge to do so, not necessarily because I had it all together and I figured it out. It just felt like the thing to do. And then it worked out. So I don't like calling it luck. I think there is something to be said of God's presence in the world and helping us to move forward. And I think that can significantly improve our chances of being successful. Now, I do not define success simply as fame or fortune or any of those things that the world would define it as. I define success as living a life of kindness and generosity, living a life that spreads success to the people around them in that same way that helps people to feel fulfilled, helps them to feel generous, moves them more towards what we would call the fruits of the Spirit. And if you approach life that way, then you do away with the other problem of meritocracies, and that is that people who do fail, people who, you know, do have terrible circumstances that they may have brought upon their lives, that they really deserve compassion rather than contempt. And if you fully believe in a meritocracy, then you're more than happy just to look at someone who's hasn't had quote-unquote success and say, well, they just didn't work hard enough, which a lot of times, I don't know how many times, it may not be that. And it may be something that's very, very hard to pin down. All I know is that when you are calmer, when you do not listen to your flesh, when you listen to the Spirit, it increases the chance that you're going to be in the right place at the right time for good things to happen. But I think they are right in this podcast that this idea of a meritocracy and the idea of success being narrowly defined, those two things together, can lead to contempt for those who are poor. And that is something that needs to be addressed with. So they said the second thing is this idea that an individualistic society preaches that an individual and their achievements are everything, and that everyone is capable of a special destiny. It's not the community that matters. Because ordinariness is looked on as a curse, and so you have to do everything that will make sure that we are achievers. You know, this does do away with, and they go on to say the cure for this is to recognize the value of an ordinary life and to appreciate the pleasures of quiet heroism in every day. And that's really true as well. You know, if you are just struggling, if you have this really stringent definition of what it means to be extraordinary, what it means to be noticed, like, well, I have to sell a million copies of a book, or I have to be on television so everyone can see me because then I've achieved my dreams. And I wanted to mention earlier, it's really interesting because those people who are there, they say things that they think sound so profound to people that are just goofy sometimes. They'll say, well, just keep believing in your dreams, because if you believe hard enough, it'll happen. Don't stop believing. Okay, yeah. For everyone, there is of you who made it all the way to the top with that hanging cat poster saying, there's a whole bunch who didn't. And you got to recognize that there's tons and tons of factors in getting up to the level of everybody knows your name, and there's lots of people who don't need that or want that. And so the idea of recognizing that life can be lived quietly and generously and kindly, and that can be seen as a great accomplishment, just like whoever who stands up on a stage and sings a song and everybody applauds, that's really an important concept. How we view the individual and how we believe an individual is valued. The other thing they mentioned, and my ears kind of perked up when they talked about this, was that they said societies, modern societies, secular societies, have ceased to believe in anything that is bigger than themselves. They said religion used to perform the useful service of keeping our petty ways and status battles in perspective. But it doesn't anymore. And so people get all bound up in stuff that's not important because the flesh drives them to those things. So they think the cure would be using sources of transcendence to generate a benign, relativizing perspective on our personal sorrow. You know, to view the stars at night and the vast spaces of the desert or the ocean would humble us all in consoling ways. Yeah, and that's true, you know. Or you could just realize that there may be a way, that reason that we don't function very well if we do not have in our lives the presence of the supernatural, in our lives the presence of the spiritual. Because we need that. We need that to lift our perspective. Okay, number four, and this was good too. They said romanticism has taught us that there's only one person that can make us totally happy, and we just have to go find that person, and then everything will be great if we just find. The reason that we're not happy is we haven't found that person. And of course, that's just hoo-ha. That's just ridiculousness. Any two people can build a good relationship. They say that the cure is to realize that we were encouraged to believe in a very impossible dream, and what we should do instead is build relationships and friendships you know, that are built on the fact that the people we're associating with are good people who are striving to be the best people they can be as well. And that's good. And obviously, I think the flesh very much uses all these ideas of, you know, oh, this is just the person for you, you know, all that kind of stuff. The flesh very much uses those ideas to keep us dissatisfied and disgruntled. And the way, one of the ways that's, that we're out of that is to recognize that it is just the voice of the flesh within us that's setting up impossible standards. And we need to do a better job saying, okay, that's not realistic. You know, that's not what's going to lead me to happiness. So, that was number four. Number five is the media with their huge presence in our lives, which they're always focusing on things that cause us worry. You know, that panic us, that enrage us. Because they're trying to get clicks. So they're trying constantly to trigger our emotions in a way that will motivate us to click on their little links and look at their little ads. And what they were saying, that the cure for that, and I just thought, yeah, like that's never going to happen, is to really focus on presenting solutions, you know, news that focuses on presenting solutions rather than generating outrage, that was alive to systemic problems rather than gleefully emphasizing scapegoats or emblematic monsters that would regularly remind us that the news we need most comes from our own lives and direct experiences. Sure, the news media is not going to change because their job is to get clicks, their job is to get eyeballs. But what can change is our recognition that that's what they're trying to do, and our effort to move away from that and focus on things that are actually more beneficial for us. Kindness, generosity, seeing what we can do in our lives to improve our own lives and the lives around us. And number six here was that, let's see, modern society stressed that it is within our remit to be profoundly content, sane, and accomplished as a result of leveling ourselves up, feeling weak and sensing that we've wasted our lives. And if we don't, then we'd feel weak. And my notes are not good because I went so fast and I just dumped the transcript. But they were saying that the cure here would be a culture that endlessly promotes the idea that perfection is not within our grasp, that being mentally slight is not within our grasp, and saying that some of us will be unwell is an inescapable part of the human condition. So, again, what you have there is this promotion of perfection. It's promotion of perfection. Why? Because we all want to stare at perfection. It all that grasps our attention, and so of course the media, of course society is going to put that forward. But I also think underneath all of these things is a collection of flesh that Paul called the world. So we not only are fighting internally this individual flesh that we have, but then this collection of flesh. It seems like a good idea to do this because we can get more people to click. And we're not even going to think about what all those clicks and driving those people to those clicks is actually doing to our society. Because all we're focused on is just the immediate. And that's the world. That's the world because it's a collection of flesh, and the flesh always is out to destroy. And the collection of flesh is out to destroy as well. So, you know, these are the things that we deal with in life. But the fact of the matter is, this is an amazing life. And really, anyone in any circumstances can find grace and mercy in God. And by quieting the voice of the flesh within them, they can find a content life. No matter what their talents and their abilities, contentment can be found. And love and kindness from God can be found. And we should be agents of that. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Time to see if I can get my internet going.